Good morning, welcome to the FTS Bet Slip on Wednesday the 18th of August. Firstly, apologies for the podcast. I do keep trying to get into a rhythm, but it is just life getting in the way, and the way I can reclaim an hour each day is not to do this and just had a load on. Obviously, you know, I don't want to keep banging on about it. The domestic situation has changed. The dog has fallen ill over the last week, and that's meant several visits to the vets, four in the last 6 days, I think it's been, dealing with things there. So obviously that takes time out. I don't know what's wrong with her. Quite entertaining yesterday, I'll be honest. They put her on antibiotics last week because they thought she just had an infection, but it wasn't an infection, so I had to take her back Monday. And they did a couple of other tests, took some blood, and then said, could we collect some urine, get a urine sample. She's quite a small spaniel. She's a Springer Spaniel, but she's not big. So when she pees, she squats right down, and she's almost touching the ground. She's got quite short legs. So he said, the vet said on Monday, could we, on the morning walk, grab her a urine sample and run it straight to them. So we set this master plan in place, Sam and I. She's very jumpy. She was a rescue dog. She's fine with us, but she's very jumpy. Any noise and she jumps. And I thought, this is going to be fun, trying to get a receptacle. So we went through numerous receptacles in the house to see what may be suitable. And decided that none of them were, so Sam set off to the shops on Monday and decided that a microwave egg poacher was the solution to this particular puzzle. So it was like a shallow thing that you put eggs in, apparently, and put it in the microwave. Sounds positively horrific. But she decided that was it. So, and then yesterday morning, normally Izzy just runs around. She doesn't even need a collar or a thing on. She doesn't go far from us. But we put the full harness on. Thought we'd put her on the lead. We can keep her under control and capture this minute. Honestly, it was like something out of a sitcom. Sam and I trying to capture, in essence, a teaspoon of pee from the dog. She was having none of it. I'm getting tangled up in the lead. Sam's trying to shove this thing underneath. There's other people in the field looking at us like we're absolutely barking mad. But we did get there in the end. So hopefully that all comes back. They think she might have eaten some stones is where they're at now. They think she might have digested some. She hasn't got any teeth. She was really bad when we got her. She had all fractured teeth and she'd been completely mistreated. And we've done a really good job getting her back and getting her confidence up. Hopefully all okay, but they think she might have eaten some stones, which is playing havoc with her. So urine tests and scans next, and then I've had the car was a minor thing. This has turned into, I think I've told stories of my customer service meltdowns on here before. I think the Amazon one and Sky, they're my two famous ones. Well, this is now could eclipse it. Long story short, we changed the car when Ari came over because Sam wanted an SUV type with better for the baby seat, higher up, easier getting shopping in and out if she takes the baby with her, all this sort of thing. So when I got a Mercedes SUV type car, 2019 plate, hadn't done many miles, nice car, and I had a meeting up in Cambridge a couple of weeks ago, and when I was driving up there, it was quite dusty. I just went to clean the windows with the old windscreen washer and nothing happened. I thought, oh, they've probably given it to us and they haven't filled that up. So I came home and filled it up, and still nothing happened. Had a mate of mine look at it, and he basically said that the sounds like the motor's gone, need to get them to look at it because you've got to take the front passenger wheel arch and all that off. So all that, I got hold of them, yeah, no problem. Got booked in, took it last Wednesday, so a week ago now, and it's been a saga. Obviously, because we've only had the car 4 or 5 weeks, it was under warranty. So when I got there, the woman started talking to me about, it's a brand new complex by the Dartford Crossing, a massive great Mercedes complex, and you drive into this sort of service. They got a sales bit, a service bit, driving, green lights, pull up, and there's a woman there with a clipboard, and she started quoting me £172 investigation charges, accusing me of putting the wrong fluids in. So that got me back up straight away, and got her to calm down. They fixed the car. I went and picked it up at lunchtime, and then I went out the next morning, and all over my drive is all this fluid. So obviously where they fitted this, it needed a new pump for the wind washers. Where they fitted that, it obviously hasn't been fitted properly, all leaked out. So I just thought, simple, I'll just ring them up and say, excuse, I was quite calm about it. Excuse me, guys, looks like you've made a mistake here. Not overly chuffed about having to bring it back, but needs refitting. Never that simple. Can't get hold of anybody. I mean, I've dealt with Mercedes for quite a long while, and Mercedes Dartford was where we got our first Mercedes, so you tend to end up going back. It was on a smaller site, and you could ring them up and get hold of them. Now they've got this massive new super duper site, but it seems to be linked to some central place, because all you get is a central switchboard. And I've spent days talking to a girl who is, frankly, and I've told them, and I've told her, thick as fucking mince. She's told me the car doesn't exist when I've given her the number plate, told me that it's very similar to the Amazon one. It's impossible to speak to anyone in the service department. She can't get hold of them, so I've got no chance. Give me a direct number, can't do that. Gone back and forth that twice, Friday and Monday. I have completely, to maximum blood pressure levels, lost my shit. And I've got to go over there today at 12 o'clock. So if you do hear that somebody has been thrown off the Dartford Crossing from Mercedes, or a man has driven his Mercedes through a garage, it is me. They're just useless, aren't they? You get this dial one, press one, press two. Hello, Mercedes London. Yeah, can I speak to Dartford service, please? Hold on, what's it concerning? I just want to get my car sorted. Hold on, wait 2-3 minutes, come back. Sorry, can't do that at the minute. What's the number plate? It's blah, 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 blah. Sorry, that's not coming up. What's the number plate? Well, that is the number plate. I've just given it to you. Blah, blah, blah. That's not coming. Well, no, that is the fucking number plate on the car, love. Come on. Jesus Christ. So it's been a week, and obviously throw in all the family stuff, and we've had some website issues. It's been quite a week. So in essence, all I was going with there is the podcast took a bit of a back step. I do hope that things improve. I'll get the car sorted today, the dog will get sorted, and life will get back to some sort of normality. It's just meant that I've had my time has been taken elsewhere. Right, a couple of other announcements. Dave don't like me saying it, but I'm going to say it. The website, we will sort it. Ultimately, I'm going to send you a Dropbox link. It isn't it's something to do with a clash somewhere when we're uploading files. So we're mad with it. You're mad with it, I know. But if you do get any issues, can you just email Dave? I am going to send Ultimate via Dropbox until we can get it resolved, to save me getting myself even more wound up. So that is that one. That will be done. The September pub do I will sort next week, and those who I who are coming, and I've had loads, so I don't think I can fit everybody in, but those who are coming, I will drop you an email next week. And on a similar vein, this isn't a seminar, this isn't a thing, we're looking to do a this came from Jeff, one of the FTS members, looking to do just a sort of FTS meetup next year in March the 26th, either in, to rather stop being London-centric, to in Birmingham or even in the Northwest. Would literally be like a networking day and get to meet other members, talk about things. I can probably do a little presentation on some bits. We haven't got a set plan. We just wanted to know if there's any interest for that. If there is any interest, then give me a shout. Either drop me an email or drop something on Twitter or the Telegram, and I can sort of get a rough idea. And if that's a goer, Jeff's going to organise it all. And we'll have a day on March the 26th, sort of, you know, obviously we'll be able to reflect on what's happened this season, but I can do bits on moving forward as well. So it isn't a, I'll come and meet Ian and get pissed up. We just want to do some, you know, we just think it would be a good idea. A lot of you meet virtually just to sort of get people to meet up and discuss some things and issues and see if we can help people, keep it as low cost as we possibly can. I think it's quite a good idea now and then. I like meeting people face to face. It's easier to talk to them. So if that interests you, just drop me a line just so we've got some. Obviously, if there's no interest, we won't do it. But if we've got a reasonable number, then we will do that around Middle Earth or up north, around the Manchester area, not the Liverpool area, around the Manchester area, somewhere like that. And on that note, also, Dave and I did some training last year. We're going to run some of that again in September. I know some of you have contacted Dave. This is going to be very much more on the basis of actually what I do and what I use and sheets I use for the first time ever. Actually have a day, I'm going to let you have my sheets, have a day with me using those sheets. If that is of interest to anybody, then just email Dave. I think he's going to contact some people who've contacted him anyway, but just email Dave. Again, just to see if that's something that interests people, then we'll do that. So that's all the announcements. Right, football was back at the weekend, wasn't it? And I've got to apologise to him. I do. I'm a fair man, Suggsy. I didn't think we had a chance on Sunday. And we only went and beat them. And he was, I mean, I was smiling like a Cheshire cat, but he was smug as you like. And quite right, Suggsy. Well done, son. I still maintain his argument and the way he went about it was wrong, but I did think we were going to get pasted. He did say, he went from saying on the Tuesday we have a good chance to the by the Sunday we have a chance. He toned it down. But it was a fantastic win. But before that, obviously, season kicked off with Brentford, didn't it? Brentford winning. I can't say it without laughing, can you? And then United won the league, apparently, Saturday lunchtime. All I heard was that United have won the league. And then Chelsea gave their opponents, Palace, who were going down, a pasting. Liverpool gave Norwich, who were going down, a pasting. So it all set up for that, and I thought, oh, Spurs might be on the end of a pasting. And the first 15-20 minutes, it looked that way. But it was absolutely superb. It was a fantastic atmosphere. I've got a poll. Dan Laker. This is amazing. I found it amazing. There's an FTS member, Dan. He's a Spurs fan. I thought he was Scottish. He lives in Scotland. And I thought he just came down to the occasional game. So he texted me and said he was down next week. Could we meet up for a beer? Was very complimentary about sort of pods in lockdown and this, that and the other. What I didn't realise was Dan is a Londoner and he goes to every game. He's a season ticket holder, flies down from Falkirk and goes to every game. Absolutely, that is dedication, Dan. And I do apologise, Dan. They got this stupid thing in the new stadium now, which I hadn't done before. Dan had come round, he's sat in a different part from us, but we'd met up, having a beer. Lovely guy, really enjoyed talking to him. And then they announced, oh, the match is about to kick off. Can you take your seats? And I went, all right, cheers, Dan. They announced that 35 minutes before kickoff. So sorry, Dan, I didn't mean to say there. I just thought we had to take our seats for the game. They then proceed to tell you every 5 minutes to take your seat. And then after the game, we normally stay behind because it's murder getting out of there. And part of the new thing with the stadium was with the increased capacity, they wanted people to stay. So they bought these bars and they have music on in the concourses and that, bands singing. To try and disperse people slower so people stay behind. But while that's going on, and this tannoy thing is so loud, every 5 minutes they're telling you to leave the stadium. Can you leave the stadium? Can you make your way down the steps? Can you make your way down the steps? Every 5 minutes. So they've got that completely wrong. But I didn't mean to shoo you off, Dan. I just thought we had to take our seats. You sort of lose track of time. I thought the game was about to kick off. But I booted him back about 35 minutes early. But it was lovely to meet you, Dan. And fair play, son, all the way from Falkirk. Every game, it's fantastic. Absolutely amazing what people do, isn't it? To follow football. But we did win. And just heading sort of home in the pub. You know, we had a drink with Suggsy afterwards. And then you head him back. And I just noticed on Twitter that somebody had put Tottenham have just beat Man City. They're celebrating like they've won the Premier League. Not going to lie, but that's a massive compliment to us. We're absolutely massive. And Dio's right. Dio put pulled some strings or whatever. It did trigger me a little bit because I thought, one, I've got a real thing about not losing humbly. And I think if people go back to when Spurs were in the Champions League final, and I had a load of banter right up to it, winding Liverpool fans up, singing songs for whatever it was a week before. But we went, we got beat, we got squarely beat. Whether it was a penalty or not is another matter. We lost the game, and I got up the next morning, and I think I was very humble in defeat on the podcast. The easy thing would have been not to do one, but I did a podcast, and I was very humble in defeat. So sort of that annoys me, the not losing humbly, and then the we're absolutely massive kind of did just get me back up. I thought, genuinely, and my point I put, not really in the old fruit, we've had a shit show of 2 years, our best player wants to go to you, you had a team today that cost over 800 million, I think it's 865 million, the team and bench, while we had players like Skip and Tanganga, academy players for zero, and that they aren't a United or a Liverpool, just a load bunch with a load of cash buying up what you can. That's what I replied to the guy, because that's how I felt at the time, and I still feel like it now. And it triggered Ed. Ed likes a little debate on Twitter. I don't see, and I had to cut it short because I thought I cannot bang there. But I've seen Ed do these before, and I like Ed. He's a lovely lad, and I thought, no, Ed, I can't be doing banging this back and forwards. But basically, Ed basically said that I was bitter and misplaced with my answer or my reply, as if they're so out of line with the rest. And he went on to say, Man United have spent £120 million more. Where's their trophies over the last 10 years? You can bash spending, you still need to be smart. And until Grealish did not consistently break their transfer record, that's what Ed opened up with. And I said, and I take some of that on board, Ed. I do think, yeah, Man United have spent a lot of money. And they have won trophies, by the way, in that period. They've won FA Cup, they've won Europa League. I don't think for any minute that Man United would, and even the biggest Man United fans, would say that their plan post-Ferguson has been one of success. You've gone from the most successful side in English football to losing the greatest manager that's ever managed in the game, and how do you keep that dynasty going? They went for Moyes. My personal opinion is they sacked Moyes too quickly. I know there'll be Man United fans scowling at me now, but that was my personal view. I think Moyes is a good manager, and he may well have done a good job there given time. From that to the big names, Van Gaal won a trophy, sacked him. Mourinho, biggest managerial name in football other than Guardiola, probably bigger than Guardiola when you look at what's gone on in his history. Don't know, you know, people would argue that. Wanted him, won the Europa League, but, you know, same as Tottenham, fell apart. It's only now that they've settled down and sort of they threw money at players looking for a manager, trying to compete. And I agree, yeah, they were trying to compete with City. I don't dispute that. No way do I dispute that. And they went about it probably all wrong, look at it. And they've now gone with Solskjaer. Whether that's the man or not remains to be debated. But it seems to be much more of a settled plan of long-term, 3, 4, 5 years, build something as opposed to throw cash at it. But yes, they do spend tremendous amounts of money, Man United, and they do spend tremendous amounts in wages. But you didn't leave it there, Ed. You didn't leave it there. You then started throwing in things that are just can be so proved wrong that it's scary. You put that Arsenal's net spend is only about 60 million less than City with no UCL, shit players. No, it's not. In the last 5 years, Ed, these things can be easily found out. In the last 5 years, Arsenal's net spend is about 200 million less than City's. In fact, City's is nearly double what Arsenal's is. So it's not even close. It's not even remotely close. It's about £50 million a year difference over the last five seasons. Five seasons is a is a reasonable period to go with. Arsenal's over the last 5 years amounts to minus 264 million. City's are now is 472 million. So it's not even close. And I think even the biggest Arsenal fan would say Arsenal's fucking transfer business, Pepe for 70 odd million and whatever they've spent over the last few years, has been shocking. You then look at the wages on top of that City spend. I mean, Man United spend fortunes in wages, to be fair, but those two are miles in front. Arsenal's wage bill compared to City's, the top 11 players in Arsenal's team compared to City's, City pay £50 million or more a week in wages. Their wage bill is astronomical. The manager, Arteta, gets £4 million. Guardiola gets £20 million. That's another £15, £16 million a year that they spend. So they do spend money, and then you said, oh, they don't break their transfer record. No, because it's nearly impossible to do it, because their players are worth that. That squad on Sunday was average £55 million a year. The average squad player of Man City, the average price, is higher than 75% of the Premier League's record signing in each club. So Man United, obviously, Liverpool, Tottenham, Arsenal, Chelsea, they're the only teams that Man City average players aren't higher than the record signing. If they do happen to get Kane, their average signing will be above Tottenham's record signing of Ndombele at 64 million. Their average player. They have gone about this, without doubt, rightly or wrongly, they're buying their way to success. And you actually put in there the suggestion that money doesn't equal spending money means success. Of course it does. Why do you think the big money? It's proven. Chelsea spent money, they win things. Came from nowhere to win things with Abramovich. Paris Saint-Germain spent money, win things. Mike Ashley of Newcastle put it well. He said, I can try and compete with other football teams. I can't compete with countries. The biggest issue with City now is where does that money come from? Tottenham and Arsenal's matchday revenue, 90-odd million. Man City's 45 million, nearly double. The only place that City catch that up is in what they call worldwide corporate revenue, and 83% of it comes from one place through what is pretty much known through the owners, Etihad, side companies, whatever it may be. 83%. Now we'll get to my issue was Wyn Humbley, but my issue was him saying he's a massive club. For me, and it's subjective, there's five massive clubs in the world: Bayern Munich, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Man United, and Liverpool. And I can't bear Liverpool. They are five massive worldwide clubs. Arsenal, big club. Arsenal, much bigger than Tottenham. But when we say the word massive, I go to America, sit down at a poker table, invariably you end up talking about sport there. Where are you from? Da-da, England. Well, Australia. Normally get Australia first. England. What do you like? Like soccer, yeah. Manchester United. That's the name they say to me. If I say Tottenham, they look at me, who? Who? There. It is getting better because obviously it's more, but it's still Manchester United. It's still Liverpool, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Bayern Munich. They are, to me, the five massive clubs that have built that reputation over, you know, decades of success, decades of worldwide recognition. Man City want to get there. I'm not saying they won't. They've got this sort of, for Man City, for me, it's almost like a James Bond movie. It's like a Spectre type approach to world domination, buying up satellite clubs. You mentioned the academy, nobody else. You got that horribly wrong. You know, their academy, they've got Phil Foden, that's it. They, exactly like Chelsea, use their academy as a cash cow. You mentioned they were the most successful club in England. They're not. Chelsea have been more successful. So I've got no problem with your arguments, Ed, but get them right. And you're welcome to come on the pod. I'm not sitting doing it on Twitter. But my issue was, my only issue was nothing really to do with money. My issue was really Wyn Humbley, which he couldn't, lose Humbley, which he couldn't do. And they are nowhere near historically the size of club like Man United, Liverpool, Real Madrid, Barcelona, Bayern Munich, in my opinion. That's just my opinion. I'm not saying they're not a successful club. Of course they are. They're buying their way to success. They are spending fortunes. And when you look at where that money comes from, and people can say, well, UEFA have looked into it. We know, if you look into anything with proper eyes, financial fair play is nonsense. You also said, why didn't they get, you know, they courted Messi for decades. Getting Messi at 28 is a lot different than getting Messi at 34. You know, he is coming to the twilight of his career. Would he have that massive impact in that team? They have got a fantastic manager. I don't particularly like the guy. Fantastic manager. They've got fantastic players. They play fantastic football. First 20 minutes, Tottenham, you know, we might as well have had another ball to play with. But there is nothing, nowhere near for me, that Man City are a club like Man United or Liverpool and that. And I'm not, they all spend money. United spend fortunes, but United generate so much more globally from everywhere than Man City do. 83% of Man City's corporate revenue, which in effect funds the club, comes from one source, and we know that that is funneled in ways that it should not be. And it will come out in time. It will, you know, without a shadow of a doubt, there's going to be a phase, you know, when you see Barcelona paying 103% of their income in wages and being 1.15 billion in debt, there is going to come a reckoning in the game at some stage. But you cannot compete with oil money if they're going to let it continue, and if that is how it's going to continue, then Man City and PSG will dominate football, and it will just be very boring and the worst. But that's the way it goes. So there you go. But don't start. You know, get it right. Get it right. Got no problem. Come on the pod. I'm not doing it by 240 word tweets. I can't get hold of you properly. Right, what else have we got? That's that. Fucking City. It's funny, isn't it, how they become the team that everybody hates very, very quickly. They started singing Harry Kane, he wants to be blue. I mean, I don't know, that's a 50-50, isn't it? I look at it, and he said they buy strategically. I look at some of those players they've bought, Cancelo, Mendy, you know, all talking 65, 70 million pound players. They just, you know, you can't break your transfer record because you're just going to, you'd be putting prices through the billion. But if they get, I mean, that Mendy's terrible, or was terrible at the weekend. If you get Kane, though, I'm just not sure Kane's good business for either side. If Tottenham sell Kane for even for 150 million, you're probably still going to get 100 million from next year. Okay, for say 80, 90. That means you've got to find a striker who can be that worth to you for the club for 60, 70 million. Are we going to find that? Probably not. And for Man City, 150 million, yeah, proven, absolute proven goal scorer, fantastic player. But 150 million at this stage when he can be injury prone, when next year they could, you know, I'm not saying definitely, but almost certainly get Haaland for 70 million, who looks like he's going to be the best player and the best striker in the world going forward, young lad, release clause. Would they not be worth, you know, I know they say they need a striker, they still won the league last year. Would they not be better sitting and spending half the money on somebody younger and who potentially is going to be better? I'm just not sure it's good business for either club, but who knows what way it's going to go. I think I do think they'll stump up the money. I think they're desperate, and I think they're going to stump up the money and end up overpaying. I think they've overpaid for Grealish when he says it's all strategic. I think they've paid 100 million for a guy who scored 6 Premier League goals and was a star in a pretty poor team. Remains to be seen how good he is. And I think that if they get Kane, they're going to overpay, in effect, overpay for Kane with the situation in the market now. But that was my sole thing. I don't think they are a massive club. I don't think of Man City as a massive club. I think Man City are a successful club. I think they're buying their way to success. They've got oil money and they're throwing it at it. You know, you said they do stuff in communities, Ed. All clubs do. Tottenham do stuff in the community. Leicester are doing stuff. And I don't think that's anything that other clubs don't do. To different degrees, admittedly. Yeah, lots to pick holes in. Come on, we'll talk about it. Right. Right, summer school's next. We're going to try and start, or I want to start providing things, dog-wise, house-wise, go okay, start the 100-day challenge next week, which will be the week of the... what about the 24th? I've got one more... content to do, which I will get out this week, by hook or crook. I'm hoping to do it tomorrow, so I'm hoping to have that up Thursday. That will have details then of the 100 challenge. And in that, you know, we're going to focus on process, but one of the key elements of that is obviously staking. And I've done a lot on sort of Mindset Mondays on staking. And a great thing for me, on Mindset, but not so much on staking, a great one for me, you know, I've talked about staying in the game. You know, I get mocked and criticised by people. I hear I was the subject of another services chat room the other day. I've got nothing better to talk about than... It's a funny thing, isn't it? Make yourself feel better by slagging off other people repeatedly. It's quite... it's a strange phenomenon. I think even Betty Blogger, I'm told, was mentioned in it in a sort of way, unfortunately, Jeff, about losing 170 points. I don't think they mentioned that you won it all back, but why would they if it doesn't fit their narrative? But people keep telling me about it. I don't really need to know. Let them get on with it if that's what makes them feel good in themselves. One of the things I want to look at and take forward is... It's not always what you bet, it's how you bet and staking. And obviously, if you're going to start something, lose 5-10 points and give up, which a lot of gamblers do, then any form of staking doesn't really matter. I've talked before on this pod and in the summer school about, in effect, having more on what wins. So, for example, I did a Zoom yesterday with an FTS member, and we were literally going to do 20 minutes, and it ended up being about an hour and a half. Because he's got one area where he's winning really well, but he's staking the same right across the board. So, in effect, the area he's doing really well is being held back by the performance of the other stuff. So we sort of looked at that and said, well, hang on a minute, let's have more here and sort that out. So that's one of the things I want to cover as we do this 100-day challenge is a staking element of... how we do it, and we'll have some variable staking in that 100 days for people doing that on the stuff that I put up. But even for yourself, it is something to look at, is how you stake. Yeah, you know, yes, we want a bankroll that's going to stay in the game. Yes, we want to commit to that bankroll, but some form of proportional staking to your edge or how things are performing or where you're winning is always worth looking at. It's something to see. You know, again, I sort of say if you bet horses, for example, and you're having the same stakes all and you're betting 10-1 to 2-3-1, you're going to have more winners at 2-3-1. It might be worth looking and having more money there and having less on the 10-1 shots, which win less frequently, and it will smooth your bankroll and maximise your winnings. So that's something that I want to sort of look at as a summary. It's difficult on podcast to sort of talk about this stuff because, you know, one of the reasons why I wanted to do the summer school was to get into showing some practical examples and doing things that way. And I think that's going to help people. But I will visit these topics on the pod as well so that those of you who haven't done summer school or who want to listen to this in your own time can sort of get areas. But ultimately... I do firmly, you know, I vary my staking. I do think that you want to look at your gambling activity, betting activity, where you have it, where you win, you know, and it's always worth testing and trying different methods of staking and going back with the data you've got and saying, actually, if I'd done it that way, you know, and there's many, many ways to stake stuff, but ultimately I think you should be having more on where you win. And what's proven to win over time, then this constant just I'll do level stakes everything, and you tend to find then that something might hold you back. So I'm going to look at doing that, but obviously I've done with my rants about City and everything else, and we're 30 minutes in. The next pod will be Friday. I will back Friday to do the weekend preview. I'm just going to let a couple of forms before we get into that, and I'll talk more about the podcast format for weekends. One thing that I'm interested in, obviously I do feedback is really what I'm looking for. Obviously I'll have numerous bets over a weekend, and on a Saturday I'll put those up for people, and we've got a Telegram group where I put bets. Do people actually want bets on the pod, or would you rather I kept it to... bedding info, stories, this, that and the other. I'm just conscious that I might have 10 bets at a weekend, pick two for the pod, and that may not be the most efficient way for people to operate. So if you do think that the, I don't need to hear if you don't want bets on the pod, but if people do find them useful and use them, be it the first half goals, one and a half, or whether you'd like me just to stick to one type of bet, just give us some feedback again, Twitter, Telegram, email, and I can just have a think about how we take that forward into the season now it started. And I will be back then on Mindset Monday. I will be doing the NFL through the NFL season, which kicks off next month. Lots to come. Right, I will leave that. Arrivederci. And for me, Man City are not a massive club. I know Ed thinks that's ludicrous, but there you go, Ed. And there was no disdain in that, Ed. I think you're a good lad. I think all clubs go through phases of support and things. I'm, you know, Tottenham, first amateur team to, only amateur team to win the FA Cup, first team to win the double, first British team to win the, to win a European trophy. That double winning side probably brought a lot of Tottenham fans in. Since then, we've been an absolute shower of garbage. And that was one of my things at the weekend. Tottenham have been such a mess for 2 years. I mean, the people I sit next to, it's a couple. I've sat next to them 15, 20 years. I haven't seen them for the best part of 2 years because she had cancer, so they didn't come. She's had cancer. She's got better from it. It was fantastic. That's why I was jumping up and around. Fantastic to be out with them. My brother and his nephew, I haven't been to a football match with them for the best part of 18 months. So this, we're celebrating and jumping around because Man City are a massive club, was complete and utter bollocks. I was jumping around because it was nice to be in a stadium with 60,000 people in a near normality, without having to wear masks, have a beer, talk to your mates, see people you haven't seen to 18 months, share stories, and obviously Tottenham played well and get a result. And Tottenham did deserve the win. So old matey with his massive club can go and poke it. Ed, you defending it, can go and poke it. On my box again, am I? Right, arrivederci. Have a lovely Wednesday, and I will be back Friday for the midweek, for the weekend preview.